boy. We're on. We're back. The return, the reunion, the reformation, the reboot, the remake of CFJ, Confessions of the Film Junkies. Technically, episode 20. We pressed the restart button and we're here again.
20, extravaganza, Tony Danza, flipaganza, don't know what word.
I guess the reunion episode should be the 20.
Who's the boss of Tony Danza? What?
What is this Tony Danza thing?
I just saw Don John again.
Is this how you start us off?
I just saw Don John again, and he was the dad in it.
Good vibrations.
I saw it for the second time, and I still remember barely anything from that movie.
I just remember. And directed by Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
I want to really like that movie, I just can't. Even though we're starting off on a depressing note.
I don't mind it.
Just I don't remember anything. I've seen it twice now in less than a year, and I don't remember a damn thing from that movie.
Great. Thank you very much for this. So, Tony Danza, Angels in the Outfield, this is how we start our show.
Oh, great movie, though. Too bad he dies like a year after that movie ends.
Yeah, right? But he becomes an angel, so it's all good at the end of the day.
Oh, yeah, that's implied, right?
As long as there's a happy afterlife, death is okay.
I mean, Lovely Bones, is that really that happy?
We're getting really deep here.
We are getting deep here, because that's a terrible fucking movie.
Very existential. I haven't seen it. Don't on it.
The book's decent.
I heard Stanley Tucci is pretty good in the movie.
I mean, I guess, like, all his other weird, creepy roles were building up for, like, the Lovely Bones.
Okay. All right, so we're back. There was a long hiatus, combination of retooling the format, and we still haven't made a concrete decision on the retooling of the format.
We're still going to do top five, it's just that we're not going to do it all the time like we were doing.
There was you getting a job, there was me getting a job, which created sheer laziness for me. I don't know if you can chalk that up for yourself.
Probably.
I don't want to put that label on you, but I'll put it on myself.
What?
So yeah, there was a good 5-6 weeks without us. I don't know if you missed us. But we're
probably
here.
Not.
Like it or not, like most sequels and reboots, we're back, so take it or leave it.
Either also all sequels and reboots were bigger and more expensive.
I don't know about more expensive, but
we had to let go of our interns, we brought them back because they didn't get jobs.
One of the interns had a kid, and the other one
in 6 weeks?
Yeah, and that other one took the job on John Oliver.
Uh-huh.
So
yeah.
We'll have to get a couple new ones.
We're not paying them anyway.
Did you put the ad up on Mandy like I told you to?
What's Mandy?
The site that we post our intern jobs on?
I thought we did Craigslist. And it's hidden as a sex ad.
So that's why no one's responded.
Well, no, a lot of people still responded to the sex ad.
Okay, should we dive into news? Do we have any news? Or are we gonna... What are we gonna do here?
Is there anything
you want to talk about? Zack Snyder defending Aquaman?
To be honest, the New 52 for Aquaman, we're a film fucking podcast, and we're diving into comic books right now, which is kind of, synonymous these days, but, New 52, Aquaman's actually a pretty badass. Like, he's actually a cool character. It's just that he gets the stigma of being Aquaman from the past, and I know people who are fans of Aquaman will always stick up for him, but, it was always, maybe the cartoon is what, the Super Friends or whatever is what put Aquaman in that awkward, in-between zone. But he's a pretty badass in the New 52 that they just did the reboot they did 2-3 years ago.
Yeah, well they said Jason Momoa.
Well, not confirmed.
Not confirmed, but they said every he's pretty other, much like that in the new version, right?
They said in every other way that you can possibly say something without confirming it that he's basically Aquaman.
Hmm.
And I think in almost every single way they have also said The Rock is either Shazam or Black Adam. He's literally wrote on his Twitter feed, "Oh, I'm not Green Lantern, but I'm someone who can kick Superman's ass." And that's, that limits it to, Martian Manhunter, which they're not going to make The Rock Martian Manhunter. It's either Black Adam or Shazam. And Black Adam's a villain, but he's been known to be on the Justice League side in certain cases.
Well...
And then The Rock has said Black Adam or Shazam on his Twitter feed. Mm. And then, after that, everything went dark.
Well... There's been... The whole thing that's been developing is that DC announced they're doing,
35 million fucking movies.
That's a lot of movies,
That's a
AJ.
Lot of fucking movies.
That's a lot of movies, AJ.
Oh,
I don't think we can see that.
What can they possibly, have on the back burner that they're making that many movies?
I think DC should take a long, hard look at Sony's recent epic fail with trying to make the Spider-Man franchise into something that can compete with Marvel.
See, I... It failed. That Spider-Man failed, but like I think it all more has to do with people leaving. That's why it didn't go forward than them actually being like, make as much money as it did.
Here's the problem, and this may sound like a bit of a rationalization. The reason Marvel is doing so well is because they make good movies. I think at the end of the day, that's what it is.
Well, if you have the right person in the head, Kevin Feige.
Yeah, but. They did similar to what Pixar did up until around Cars 2. I mean, Pixar still makes money, but not, like, the success they had prior to Cars 2, where it was a trust between... And a lot of people have been talking about this recently with why Marvel made so much money off Guardians. After having so much consistently good films, they've built a trust with the audience. The audience now knows... If a movie has the Marvel logo in front of it, we're gonna probably get a good experience.
And if you have a DC Sony, logo, you're gonna have a depressing experience.
Yeah. Yeah, depressing.
Good where they kill it. 20 million people.
Yeah. Right, so both Sony and DC are trying to bank, hoping that people will buy a ticket based only on the character and not the quality of the film. That's what they're going on now, because Amazing Spider-Man 2... was not a critical success, and it was not a commercial success that they were hoping it would be.
Well, for the amount of money they spent on marketing, it was not.
Yeah.
Because the budget was like $200 million, and you have to think that they spent at least another $100 or maybe $115, $120 on marketing alone. So that puts it upwards of $325-ish.
Mm.
And it only made like, what, $270, $260, maybe even less in the domestic total. They were expecting, let's put it this way, they were just, that's a lot of money for... anyone to wrap their head around, but they were expecting like $1 billion worldwide. Yeah. They didn't even come close to that.
And I say it's a lot of people think it's because there's been too many films. It got rebooted too quickly. I think at the end of the day, if it's a good movie, people would go see it. Poor word of mouth. Also connected with the fact that the first one wasn't that well received either.
No.
I think that all plays into why that movie was a failure. And the same thing with Man of Steel, a little bit less so, because I think they were happy with Man of Steel's business. But Man of Steel, I think they said, made a little bit more, a little bit less than Superman Returns, which Superman Returns was a very epically failed reboot.
Yes. If you guys haven't seen Superman Returns, you probably live under a rock. But it's like, it was Bryan Singer's attempt to basically be a homage at the same time a reboot to the Richard Donner movies, yeah. And it just didn't work.
It ignored the story of 3 and 4, continued from where 2 left off.
Yes.
While at the same time...
Never saw 2.
I like 2.
The Donner cut or the regular cut?
I've seen only the regular cut. I want to see the Donner cut at some point. But I don't mind Returns as much as most people. Then again, I haven't seen it in a very long time. There are parts of the story that are kind of silly. But they both DC and Sony are just trying to go and run with these properties that still aren't proven yet. Marvel, while it doesn't seem this way, really did take their time. Iron Man was the beginning of Phase 1, which was like 2008, I think, or maybe even before that.
What, first Marvel movie?
First Iron Man.
It was 2008.
So that
I remember because I was like, wow, I don't remember Iron Man and Dark Knight coming out in the same year. And when I looked it up,
I remember that because I remember they were joking about it.
Because one of my next articles I'm running is, what can you say is the best year in comic book movies? So I was just researching the last 10 years and looking up what comic book movies came out in what year.
So, sorry, I was just looking this up. I'm just curious about the years and the way it all played out. Yeah, now I remember.
You want to know? I have it written down right here.
I have it now. We're all good.
It's literally written right here.
Iron Man and Incredible Hulk both came out in 2008.
Yes.
And then it was
Don't forget about the critical darling, the Punisher Warzone.
And then it was roughly 3 years until we got Thor and the first Avenger.
Yeah, Thor was of 2011.
And that's the same phase. It's not like that was the break.
Mm.
That was the same phase of movies, all having to do with Avengers. So you got 2008 to 2011. That's a 3-year gap of proving to the people. And the difference is that both Iron Man and Thor were both well-received, both commercially. Yeah, I was combining critically and commercially into one word.
We make that our own word now?
Commercially.
We're making that our word now.
I lost how to say it already.
Commercially?
Commercially. Commercially, they were both well-received. And then on top of it, Marvel gave 3 years to let that seep in. That's not what either Sony nor DC are planning. Sony now is planning it, but it doesn't work because Spider-Man 2 crapped out.
How the fuck? My mind can't be wrapped around the idea of doing a Sinister Six movie without somehow making them the good guys, well, like Hollywood does.
Yeah,
the time.
I was gonna say this. Everyone's kind of been shrugging off the Sinister Six movie. What in the hell is it gonna be about?
I don't know.
What are they gonna do?
They has to have Spider-Man in it, right? Like, it has to.
But that's what I'm saying.
What, is going to be like a fucking bottle episode, an hour and a half of all of
villains? Yeah, so Sony revealed that. Then Sony revealed they were going to do a female-driven one, probably Black Cat, because they revealed Felicia in Spidey 2.
I was
going
to say Felicity, but
the difference is Sony hasn't put themselves in a place yet where they can take those risks. Marvel can do it because they now have a string of hits and are now a brand.
Mm-hmm. They are, Brent.
What was Phase 1? Phase 1 was pretty much every known
except
major character that they had the rights to.
Yeah.
Who was put in the most minor? Thor.
No, I would say, all right.
I'm saying out of those four movies.
I would put Thor and Iron Man on the same level because people don't remember it because Downey's basically become Iron Man.
Yeah.
Iron Man was a C-level villain, character.
Yeah, yeah.
He was.
But I'm saying in terms of the films, as far as like, I don't know. I'm trying to figure out how to explain it. I do agree with you as far as what Iron Man's notoriety was, but I feel like Iron Man was being pushed because it was the first Marvel movie.
Yeah.
And when it was critically received, when it was well received critically, people made Iron Man more popular. Thor still hadn't been proven.
No.
And I think now negating Iron Man, I think Thor, Captain America, and Hulk, I think we could say that Thor was the lesser of the three.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm saying, like, I don't even think Thor was a risk, though. It was gonna make money.
It was a very contained movie for what it was.
Yeah, yeah. Like it made money. It wasn't like the success Avengers was.
It was money. It was until Thor: The Dark World. It was like the lowest rated movie out of all of them.
Yeah,
I like Thor though. I actually don't mind that movie.
But what I'm saying is, Marvel did not get to this point of going year for year movies, Marvel movies, until they did Avengers. That's what got it down pat. Doing Avengers was what made them go, okay, we're now in a place where we can take the risks. DC is just assuming that they have a brand that people recognize, they could do whatever they want. That's not the case. They need to prove themselves.
Let me play the devil's advocate here. I would say that up until before the Avengers was not as household of a name as the Justice League. I say that 15 years ago, the Justice League DC, that was a bigger brand name than Marvel.
Yeah, but
what they're banking on now, is that people still remember who Batman, people know who Superman are, and they know who Wonder Woman through association and Green Lantern, and they're hoping for that. That's why they're doing this.
I think it's a risk.
And it's also catch-up.
Yeah, but again, there's already a risk in place, jumping the gun, doing two movies prior to your Justice League movie. Marvel had four movies to prepare for the Avengers. They're doing two.
I just hope they don't blow their load with some of the
good
villains.
But let's let the record show the first one wasn't that good.
No.
And now they're expecting this Batman Superman movie that they're just cramming 5 bazillion things into. That already sounds bad.
I had a geekgasm when I watched the online video.
I didn't see it.
And they probably took it down before you got a chance to see it.
I didn't even read up on it because I really don't care about that movie.
They had.
I know I'm gonna see it, but I don't care.
But he was wearing the Dark Knight Returns suit.
I don't care.
It was awesome.
Christopher Nolan has made me no longer geek out about Batman. I love Batman to death, but I can't geek out on any of that shit.
And then that was also really cool, the picture that leaked this week or last week. It was in with the 7-day period, so the picture that leaked of Ben Affleck as Bruce Wayne. It looked pretty cool. He looked like an older, more weary Batman.
Such a nerd.
Oh, dude. Just seeing those white streaks in the side of his head got me really fucking excited.
We can't discuss this anymore. It's like, you're being too... You're being too fanboy.
Oh, I am going to be fanboy. And then I'll be the first person to admit that this fucking sucked if it sucked.
Okay.
But like, look, I walked out of Man of Steel and I was like, that was terrible.
Yeah.
I like Superman. Don't get me wrong, I'm not as big of a Superman fan as I am Batman. But like, I walked out and I'm like, that was the wrong direction in every step of the way.
Mm.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know. I'm very cautious about this whole DC thing. I am really interested to see where it's going because they're banking a lot on one movie that isn't even
finished.
What'd
you think of, on a side note of DC, Gal Gadot's costume? Did you see it?
Of who?
Gal Gadot, is that
what it was? Oh, the brownstone thing?
I think it's just dulled.
It's the
DC Man of Steel dulling the colors, and so it's gonna be red, it's just dulled red.
I don't get critical on costumes.
I look cool. I people were shitting on it.
I like to look at costumes, but I don't really think about it because I think it's stupid to become critical on something that really has no weight on the merit of the story or the character.
I don't know. It was still something cool to just look at.
Yeah, yeah. Again, I'm agreeing with that. I like to see what they're going to look like, but the people who look at that costume and they're like, oh, it's a terrible costume, that means the movie's going to be shit, or, oh, that's an awesome costume, the movie's going to be great. The costume has no weight on it. Like, I just feel it's ridiculous.
Dark Knight Returns. Dark Knight Returns is just, armor looks amazing. I'm just saying. And it was a shitty fucking... All right, can we talk about one minor thing before we move on to what we saw?
Okay.
Because it bothers the shit out of me.
Okay.
I don't understand the Comic-Con logic. I think it's like it's backwards logic to solely release this footage at Comic-Con.
Okay, I've heard this debate. I think that's ridiculous. What is the point of having Comic-Con if the footage isn't going to be exclusive to Comic-Con?
Because you're in the day and age where why would you want the internet to see the shitty on the cell phone version of it? It's going to get leaked
no matter what.
It's going to get leaked no matter what. It's half of their time. Yes, you do the...
But how quickly? But they get it put down so quickly.
Yeah, but you can... Literally, if you go deep into Google, you can still find the fucking... Batman vs. Superman trailer. You can. It's not that hard. Oops, I almost knocked over the mic. I don't get this backwards line. You go to Comic-Con for everything else, too. It's a fucking show. You go there to see the people on the panel.
AJ,
It's the idea of... The idea of being a geek is the idea of seeing it first. You have more of a geekasm for seeing it first than going just so you can see it and say, oh, I fucking saw it. No one else fucking saw it.
AJ, if San Diego Comic-Con didn't have exclusive footage...
A lot
Their
of people still
attendance
go.
Attendance would fucking plummet.
A lot of people still
A
go.
Lot of people would still go. I'm not disagreeing with you. Their attendance would plummet.
But
why is attendance... Like, the New York Comic Con is packed. Is it packed the way San Diego is packed? No, no way.
It's on a smaller level.
But I'm just saying, it's on a smaller level because of what San Diego Comic Con shows.
And
they'll never not make it exclusive to San Diego Comic Con because they would be too scared of how much that would affect their numbers.
I do think that's it's backwards logic because it's going to be shown no matter what, and it's just the idea of why would you want the shittier version of your thing on the website versus a nice crisp AD. I'm not saying
either way, you're promoting the movie, and B, the viewer is like, this footage sucks. I want to just see it for real. I'm going to go to Comic-Con
and see it for real. No, you're not. Because you're waiting on a fucking 15-hour line when you go to Comic-Con.
Some people would.
Some people would. Don't get me wrong. But it's the idea that why don't you jump ahead of it before it comes out? I'm not saying release it that day. I mean, give them some bit of exclusivity because with the fact that release it 2 weeks later. Like, whatever happens, a week and a half later. Why have the only thing on the internet is being shitty cell phone footage? And then that's there forever. Even if no matter how many fucking junks they keep sending to people and cease and desist orders, that thing is forever on the internet and people are seeing the shittier version of it.
I don't know. I think, like I said, my perspective is from the business side of the way they run things. I just don't think they would ever approve of something like that.
I mean, they eventually released the Guardians footage from that Comic-Con. It came out in the trailer. It's 4 months later.
Yeah, 4 months later, though.
But, give it, 2 weeks, release the stuff. You're still getting 2 weeks ahead of everyone else.
I don't know. I think it ruins the magic. I don't even want to say magic, because...
Magic of farts and sweaty people?
I like going to Comic-Con, and meanwhile...
I'm going to New York Comic-Con. I am.
I've been once, and I've mixed reaction.
I'm going to go on a Thursday. Hopefully my bosses aren't listening if I still have work then. And I'm calling in sick that day.
Okay, then. Yeah, I don't know. I'm a mixed person when it comes to the comic conventions. I think it's a place for rich men, and I'm not one.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely a place. You want everything, and you can't buy everything.
Yeah.
I understand that. I'm probably going to be forced to dress up, too, unfortunately. Rachel's going, too, and she's going to force me to dress up with her. Don't even ask what it's going
to
be.
This got a lot better.
Don't ask what it's
going to be. I'm now looking forward to the New York Comic Con.
Yeah, don't ask. Hey, let me put it this way. It has something to do with Game of Thrones.
Oh, yes. I can't wait for this now. I'm counting down the days.
All right.
Mark it on calendars.
All right, so let's get anything else? Anything else?
No.
I think we got everything. Did you see those, one last thing. Did you see, those pictures from Jurassic World?
The rap and all that shit. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't really show much.
You got a boner, though.
I'm excited. I've been excited for this movie.
I'm excited, too. I like Safety Not Guaranteed. It's a small movie that had a great sci-fi premise. And I'm excited for Chris Pratt's newfound fame. I love Andy Dwyer. He's one of my favorite characters. So,
okay. You ready?
Yeah. Why are you going first?
How many movies you got?
I limited it to three because we probably have a million from the last time we saw each other.
Well, yeah. I did the most recent, which is roughly five.
Well, finish the last one with one we saw together, which is Guardians. We'll talk about that last.
Okay. All right. So I will start with Under the Skin, which I had to watch via disc. It is not yet on Instant View. This is from the director of Sexy Beast.
I want to see Sexy Beast.
And so do I. And it's based on a novel, and it stars Scarlett Johansson.
Who gets naked.
She is naked, which I was shocked, because I read rumors that she was naked, and I hate, focusing on these things, but she's never really bared before.
Nope.
Like this.
Besides the leaked pictures on the cell phone.
And I found it pretty interesting that this was the film she decided to go there with. So she plays a nameless character. I have to see what they even credit her as in this film. She plays a nameless character who is preying on men in a town in Scotland. She lures them in via seduction. And we find out that she's been molded to be a human from her alien physique. Like, she became human.
So she, adopted, the best possible looks for
the predator.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like her... It's partly her doing the seduction thing and partly her, figuring out what it means to be human. And I can easily say there's probably altogether 3 to 4 pages of dialogue in this film, and it runs for about 1 hour and 45 minutes. So, needless to say, it's a very visually driven film.
It's very surreal.
Yeah, kind of surreal, yeah. I would say surreal.
That's what I got from the trailer.
I don't want to say surreal. I feel like surreal isn't a good way of putting it. Maybe, psychedelic than surreal. Science fiction is in there. I would relate this film to Enter the Void, Beyond the Black Rainbow. Very trippy. It's extremely trippy. I don't want to say it felt very long, but there's definitely some slow moments because a lot of it is no dialogue. And there really isn't much to go on based on performance. It's a really hard movie to judge. That's what I'm trying to say, pretty much. I enjoyed it. It was a very interesting experience. And if you're into trippy movies like I am, you'll probably enjoy it. If you're into stuff like Alejandro Jodorowsky stuff, like El Topo and Holy Mountain, if you're into Enter the Void, if you're into Black Rainbow, which not a lot of people are, I would say give it a watch. It's very, very strange and very hard to explain without ruining it because the story is very, I don't want to say one-dimensional, but it's a very simple story. Once you get what's going on, there's not really much else to it. But yeah, I would say check it out. It's fairly new, and I have a feeling it'll be on Instant View sometime soon.
Yeah, I mean, you can probably rent it on one of those,
VOD. Yeah. I think it was available on VOD at some point. So that was the first movie I saw, Under the Skin. The second film I saw was from Chan Wook Park, the guy that directed Old Boy.
Okay.
Is that his name? Am I saying it right?
I think so.
I'm gonna look it up. But the film is called Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance.
I heard it's a fucked up movie.
Yeah, which is the precursor to Old Boy. He made Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance, Chan Wook Park. This was his first film of his revenge trilogy. I believe it was his third or fourth feature-length film. He did this, he did Old Boy, and then he did Sympathy for Lady Vengeance. That is his revenge trilogy. And this was a very fucked up film, not quite as, not quite as messed up as the story elements of Old Boy, but just as visually arresting and just as depressing. Filled to the brim with his trademark, very, very pitch black dark humor, in a very unique story. I've slowly begun to really like Chan-Wook Park. I haven't seen most of his films yet. I've only seen Stoker, Old Boy, and Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance now. Sympathy for Lady Vengeance is on my queue. Both Sympathy films are on Instant View, as well as Old Boy. And I have Thirst and one other film on my
queue.
But the film is very interesting. It's about... I'm trying to, like... With a lot of the films I've watched, it's very hard to explain them without ruining everything. The film is about a guy who is deaf and can't talk because of his deafness. And he has a sister who needs kidney surgery. She needs, like, a new kidney. And he can't give her his because they don't have matching blood types. And he has a girlfriend who is an anarchist. And she runs with, like, an anarchist terrorist group that we never see. Like, she just keeps saying she's in the terrorist group. And in the beginning of the movie, he's working at a shit job. He gets laid off. They give him a decent amount of a severance package. And being that the hospital isn't really helping, he decides to put that money towards a black market organ donor organization. And they work out a deal. He'll give them all of his severance money and his kidney. And in return, they'll give them a kidney he could give his sister. And what happens is they knock him out, take his kidney, and leave him. And he's fucked. And then what happens is the hospital calls him, and they found a kidney right in time for him to be broke. And he gets desperate, and that's really when the film begins to unfold. It's a very, very tense thriller. It's an interesting commentary on both the idea of revenge and the class system of, like, being very, very rich, being very, very poor, being very desperate, and a very human story because of the everything I just said. Pretty much everything that tackles, like, what it means to be human in terms of greed, revenge, suffering. So it's a very deep film, to say the least, and I really, really enjoyed it. I don't think it's quite the masterpiece that Old Boy was, but I would still put it up there with a really great revenge film. And yeah, that's really all I could say about it. Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance on Instant View. Highly recommend it. La-di-da.
La-di-da, la-di-da.
Yeah, thank you. The third movie I watched, I feel like I'm just rambling now. The third movie I watched, I was not really looking forward to. It comes from director David Wayne, who is best known for Wet Hot American Summer and Children's Hospital. I saw They Came Together. Starring...
I literally was going to watch this week, and I forgot.
Paul Rudd and Amy Poehler. I don't really find David Wayne to be particularly funny.
You like Role Models?
Role Models I liked, but I feel like Role Models is more of a straightforward comedy than Wet Hot is. And They Came Together follows that strange, bizarre humor they introduced in Wet Hot. The irony is they do the same humor in Children's Hospital, and I usually like Children's Hospital. I don't think it's as great as everyone makes it to be, but I enjoy it. So They Came Together is a satirization of every rom-com you can imagine. Paul Rudd and Amy Poehler are the couple, and the movie is pretty much them recounting to a couple how they got together with one another. The cast is ridiculously filled to the brim with people. Paul Rudd and Amy Poehler are the two leads. Bill Hader and... one of the chicks from The Office, the second secretary, and I'm forgetting her name, and I feel terrible about that. Not Pam, the second secretary, for those of you who are listening, and I'm sure everyone's screaming her name. Ellie Kempner. Kemper.
Emily was the name of the character? No.
No, that's the actress's name.
I'm talking about Emily was the name of the character, I think. No, doesn't sound right. All right, continue. I'm going to think about this for the rest of the
time. Ellie Kempner.
I'm going to ignore what you're saying and try to think of her character name for the rest of the thing.
So they play the other couple that's here in the story. Christopher Maloney is in it. The other Dawn from Mad Men is in it. She plays Amy Poehler's best friend, which was really weird to see her playing like a best friend role. Like, I'm not used to seeing her in like a contemporary setting. It was really bizarre.
It's like watching John Hannum in a contemporary setting. Yeah. It just doesn't fit.
What I'm going to say really was summarized to me by when I listened to the Slash Filmcast, because they did a quick review of it and they pretty much hit the nail on the head. This movie doesn't really tackle the newer cliches of rom-coms. It really only tackles stuff from like the late 90s, early 2000s. I think they could have gotten a little bit... They could have had a little bit more references to the newer stuff. I think it could have gotten to a much darker place. I wanted it to get really fucked up, and it didn't, which was very upsetting to me. But I just felt like if you're making fun of rom-coms, you should, like, really make fun of rom-coms and go there. But I just didn't feel like it went there where it should have gone overall. But again, it had its really funny moments, and Poehler and Rudd were great together. They were really, really funny, had really, really good chemistry. So, I don't know. I was very in the middle on this one. I didn't like it, but I can't say I hated it. I can't say it was a terrible movie. I just didn't think it was particularly funny, a lot like how I felt with Wet Hot American Summer. But I will say, if you were interested in the film, I'm not really disparaging you from seeing it, because I think...
I was going to watch it. I'm going to watch it this week, yeah.
Yeah, you should see it at some point. So yeah, there was that. And then the second to last film I'll say before... The last film is Both of Us, which is the same director of our last film. I saw Slither today.
Oh, I love Slither.
Which was really awesome. Written, directed by James Gunn. It was his first directorial effort. I was trying to figure out the best word to
was
put
it
that.
Was his first effort? I thought they had the smaller superhero movie before that.
Super?
No, not Super. The other one.
Which one?
He had another superhero movie that was really indie, and it was like with all his friends before Slither.
I'm going to look. So he did this shortly after he wrote the Dawn of the Dead remake.
I remember very fondly that every single trailer for Slither was from the writer of Dawn of the Dead.
When I was watching it with my friend, he asked me, I wonder if they were marketing it like as the writer of Dawn of the Dead.
No, they were. Like, it was distinctly on every single preview was writer of Dawn of the Dead.
So he directed three shorts. He directed an episode of Troma's Edge, and then he did Slither.
Okay, I don't know what movie. Maybe he wrote it then. Go to his writing credits and see if he wrote like a superhero like indie film before that.
All right, we're looking. Hold on to your hats, everyone. This is very interesting.
This is why we need fucking interns.
Well, he wrote other things. The Specials, is that what you're
thinking? Yes, the Specials.
He wrote that. Okay. He did not direct. Slither is pretty much an ode to both 70s, 80s.
Exploitation. It dabbles in it.
The whole small town invasion movies, mm-hmm. It reminded me a lot of Arachnophobia and Eight Legged Freaks. It was a lot like those movies. It's about a worm-like alien creature that supplants itself into a small town in the south of the USA, and it's just about the town fighting back with it. It pretty much was like the last horror comedy to come out for a few years, because I was reading up on it. Supposedly it was a huge bomb, and that disparaged a lot of people from ever making horror comedies again.
Elizabeth Banks, right?
Elizabeth Banks is in it. Nathan Fillion's in it. Michael Rooker's in it. Yeah. He plays pretty much the main antagonist of the movie. And then there's cameos by Lloyd Kaufman and James Gunn's brother, a lot like Guardians. I really, really enjoyed this movie. Had a wonderful amount of gore, a wonderful amount of practical effects, practical makeup. CGI was a little lacking, but
especially when like the worm would go in the mouth. I remember CGI was not looking too
good. It looks a little silly, but the practical stuff makes up for it. Really liked Michael Rooker in this. Yeah. I love Elizabeth Banks. I wish she did more good movies, because she does some really bad stuff.
I like Pitch Perfect.
A lot of really crappy rom-coms. I'm going to ignore what you just said.
I like Pitch Perfect. She's directing Pitch Perfect, too. Yep. There we go. It's out there. All right.
So, yeah, I really enjoyed this. Aside from Elizabeth Banks, I also wish Nathan Fillion would do other things that weren't Castle.
He's just collecting paychecks for that.
But yeah, I really, really enjoyed this movie, and I would say if you liked Guardians of the Galaxy, if you liked the strange humor of Guardians of the Galaxy, I highly recommend Slither. If you enjoy stuff like Cabin in the Woods and Drag Me to Hell, I believe this was a precursor to those. I would love to one day do a double feature of this and Drag Me to Hell, because I think they're both underappreciated horror movies.
Love Drag Me to Hell.
Comedy elements. So yeah, Slither. Really, really enjoyed it. And I guess we're moving on now, right?
Guardians! Hey. So, yeah, some small movie called Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, we both saw the new Marvel Explosion of Space. Their first effort to enter the Marvel Cosmic Universe, which is the more space-infused.
Which most people do not know about, including myself. I look up a lot of the stuff.
Yeah. Written and directed by James Gunn, which was a huge risk, which they also did this year with the Russo brothers and Winter Soldier, and I think it's safe to say on both accounts it paid off in spades.
And I was shocked, really, as much as when I was watching this, I'm like, wow, this is really a James Gunn movie. Like,
yeah.
This is his humor. Like, and most of the time his humor is hard R, and this is as close as R they can get for a PG-13 rating for a Marvel movie. And I was like, wow, this is fun.
Yeah, and not just was it a risk on James Gunn, the lead of the film was a very unproven action star. Everyone mostly knows him as the schlubby boyfriend from Parks and Rec.
Husband.
Who is awesome.
Husband. He's sorry, a schlubby husband.
I didn't get that far on... Oh, wait, I did get that far on the show. What am I talking about? They did get married. Yeah, husband, sorry. Chris Pratt, who was absolutely awesome in this movie. I mean, I think it's safe to say the entire cast of the movie was pretty awesome. Yeah. Amazing.
One or two things, but this is nitpicking, though. It's always Saldana.
It had its faults. It was by no means a perfect movie, but I think, all things considered, I said this to a couple people now, I think I would place this below Winter Soldier, but above Avengers. I really, really, really like this movie, and I think its faults were not as much as the Avengers had faults. I think it was a little bit better.
Well, this is like the first Marvel movie to be a straight comedy. 100% comedy, this movie. It's hilarious from beginning to end. From the beginning where they do like a Raiders of the Lost Ark scene with him dancing and singing to Come and Get Your Love by Redbone. Like, it's just a funny movie from beginning to end. I mean, yes, you do have your exposition-heavy scenes to explain some...
How about one of the most dramatic openings to a Marvel movie ever?
Oh, yeah.
That I was like so fucking depressed. I was like, Jesus, this film's getting dark.
And then it goes right to Redbone.
Yeah.
It's a friggin' fun movie. Again, it has a fault. I didn't think... A lot of people disagreed with me about this, but I wrote in my review, I didn't think Ronan the Accuser was that strong of a villain. I like Lee Pace. I just didn't think he was that good of a villain.
Yeah, well, a lot of people have said this, myself included. Marvel's biggest fault, period, has been their lack of villains.
Minus Loki,
there really has not been a memorable villain. I think I'm trying to think now.
Yeah, I'm thinking back that too.
I think both Guy Pearce and...
Mickey Rourke was wasted. He was an awesome character.
I think Guy Pearce and, spoilers, the villain of The Winter Soldier. I think both those villains are just below memorable. They're good villains and unique villains. But I think other than those two guys, I think every other villain in the Marvel movies have been extremely forgettable.
It sucks though because they had some really good actors too playing.
Mickey Rourke is good. He's a good actor, but I feel like
they fuck up the script. Would you stop with that? They fuck up the script with Mickey Rourke. They barely do it. If you don't know what Luce, obviously you don't know what Luce is doing. Is he's fucking around with the chair and he's going up and down. And he constantly just randomly hits the down button and just goes flying down. He's done this like three times now. They have that. I mean, Mickey Rourke was a good villain. I mean, Jeff Bridges was a good freaking actor to have for a villain. He was an unmemorable villain.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, I feel like the first two Iron Man movies were take your villain, says something villainous, stick him in a suit, the end.
Yeah, and then blow him up.
Why must every Iron Man villain get in the Iron Man suit at some point in the movie? That's just beyond me. They have a big problem, and I do agree. I think Ronan was extremely forgettable. I don't think he was quite as forgettable as...
Malekith. He's not.
Yeah.
Malekith is the most forgettable villain.
He was awful.
In that universe.
But Ronan's right there. I think Ronan's design kind of salvaged him. I thought his character design was really cool, but...
This is going to be a bold statement what I'm saying here, but... And I'm not saying it is as good as what I'm going to say, but Guardians of the Galaxy is good enough where if I was 10 years old right now, I can see this being... the Star Wars to us.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I don't think.
I mean, yeah. We were obviously weren't born yet when the original Star Wars trilogy came out.
No, but I know
what you mean. I was played for so much when I was 4 or 5 that I can see this being the end all be all for 10-year-olds right now.
Oh yeah, I agree. I completely agree.
And friggin' Rocket Raccoon are gonna be every other comic costume this Halloween.
Yeah.
They really are.
Yeah, I agree. I think the other fault is they develop their friendship rather quickly. There's one scene in the movie where they're like, hey, we're all friends, like, we're all good friends now, and they're like, you're right, like, I want to die with my friends, and this and that, and I'm like, didn't they meet, like, 3 days ago? Like, yeah. What are they talking about?
I mean, I never really thought about it because, hey, it was just like...
Yeah, yeah. It's not a... We're
extenuating
searching certain set VR. At this point.
And I also love the after credit scene. What we were discussing was a big... In my opinion, it was a big F you to DC, but you had different views on it.
I took it as just a little joke. A little laugh for each other.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, highly recommended by both of us.
It was pretty damn amazing.
Yes.
Pretty damn near perfect. And it made me excited to see Chris Pratt in Jurassic World.
Yep. And, I mean, yeah, Chris Pratt had a really good year.
And it made me excited to see how many shades of Zoe Saldana will look gorgeous.
Yeah. Chris Pratt had a really good year, though.
Yeah.
Like a movie in this. All right, so first movie that I saw. I'm going to go with the really shitty one first. I really hated this movie. It came out 2 weeks ago. It just, we haven't been around in a while, so me and Lewis have shared some laughs over this movie. I don't think you've seen it, but Lucy was god-awful.
Oh, boy.
Oh, man. I couldn't buy into any of this movie.
Did you use more than 10% of your brain when you were watching?
I think I used, like, 1%, less than 1%. As she starts getting more brain capacity, the stupider the movie gets.
Ah.
I think someone said that, and it's completely 100% true. Like,
so we won't see a Transcendence Lucy crossover film anytime soon?
No, but Lucy made enough money that you could probably get a Lucy 2 out of it, which I can see happening. Like, I didn't see Under the Skin, and everyone, like, equates Scarlett Johansson's performance to, like, her, like, deadpan look in Under the Skin. And, like, let's start this off very quickly. When she's, like, starts turning into this fucking thing, she has, like, I can describe it as, like, an epileptic seizure, but she's doing it on the ceiling. So then jumps, and she starts getting more capacity of her brain, she becomes a badass. So, like, at least Limitless, it was fun watching him, like, start, like, getting his powers and, like, becoming really smart, and he was testing the waters. Here, just hyperdrive, just right into it, and there's no build-up or whatever.
Well, I think the other thing is, like, in Limitless, it's not really... see Bradley Cooper face off against Blake. Yeah. It's more him dealing with what he's going through. It's more of a self versus self than self versus the world.
Yakuza. Yeah. Wait, was it Japan? No, it wasn't Japan. That's really racist when he said it.
It was an Asian
mafia organization. Which, mafia. It started really cool with how violent it was. Like, I'm all on board with that when randomly you get a hard R like this and it never happens that often. But as soon as this movie started, I knew I was in for the wrong fucking suit. They intercut her, because her boyfriend tries to convince her to deliver the package, which is the drugs. And that's how the movie starts. Like, she doesn't know her boyfriend's mobbed up or whatever the fuck it is. And it's intercut with Predator getting prey images of animals randomly. And it's really out of place. It's like, why the fuck are you doing this? And it's constantly intercut with Lucy, which is the first... ape that was found from what, billion years ago. It's random. It's really intercut with all this shit, and it's like, do you really want to hammer the message in that badly? Do you think we're that dumb that we don't understand what you're implying?
I think silly stuff like that could work, but I read
super serious though.
Yeah, but I read no. But I'm sure it looks silly. I'm just saying. I think things like that can work if it goes the whole way with the movie. But I heard like it stops after
it
a certain point.
Literally stops as soon as the violence starts to kick in, and then. So we're supposed to like our main character who becomes less and less human, and the opening scene, she walks into a surgery, realizes the guy's gonna die anyway, then puts two bullets in the guy's chest. Random victim getting operated on, she just blows him away and kills him.
And fuck him.
That's basically what she says. She's like, he's gonna die anyway, might as well fuck him, kill him. And she just starts telling, becomes amoral, and it just gets stupider and stupider with every step Luc Besson... What was it I sent you? Like, the opening starts off as Leon the Professional, and it works his way into 2001 Space Odyssey, and then works his way to Inception. It's like, shut the fuck up, you pretentious prick.
But you didn't feel 2001.
Oh, no, it was terrible.
It wasn't there.
And this sucks so much, because I like Luc Besson so much. Like, you give me Leon, and I watch Leon any day of the week. Give me Fifth Element, and I watch any day of the week. I love those movies.
Transporter 2.
I actually like Transporter series.
I haven't seen,
but minus
I've only
three,
seen the first one.
Minus three. Three is the guy who did Taken 2. Mm. It's just like Oliver Megatron, or whatever the fuck his name is.
Megatron?
It's like something like that.
Is his name Megatron?
It's like, no, it's like Megatron or some French shit. Like that, though.
No, from now on, he's Megatron.
Okay. But yeah, so...
I hope this guy makes movies
soon.
Don't
see Lucy... He's making another movie soon, actually. I think he might be doing, like, Taken 3 or some bullshit.
Call Megatron again.
Lucy, atrocious. It's two-sided, though. A lot of people really like this movie. I don't see any redeeming factor of this movie. Even Scarlett Johansson. Like, just think about Luc Besson. You think about strong female characters, and then he creates a one-dimensional, amoral character that sucks for Scarlett Johansson, who deserves a three-dimensional, like, great, kick-ass Luc Besson character, and she doesn't
like
get
any. Like Black Widow?
Black Widow was one-dimensional in Iron Man 2, and then she became a great character because of Scarlett Johansson.
In Avengers.
In Avengers, yes. So, yeah, Don't See Lucy. It fucking sucked. Second movie that wasn't that good that I saw this week was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Oh, boy.
All right. Let's start this off right off the bat.
Here we go. I'm buckled.
It would have been a good movie.
Oh, boy.
Minus all of the human characters.
Oh, so it was Godzilla.
Yes. It was... The Turtles were actually a lot of fun to watch and at times really funny. And their dialogue obviously was kiddie down, but it was still pretty fun. It was like watching the first two over again. Mm-hmm. And like just having like... Because I'm going into this and I'm not that big of a Turtles fan. I was forced to watch it as a kid. I liked it. I just was never as big as everyone else. So I'm going in with like an open mind, optimistic. Because I'm not the fanboys who get pissed off at every little fucking thing they do wrong with the Turtles. So it's like, maybe I'll like this movie. Then Megan Fox comes on the screen. What's the stupidest dialogue I've ever heard in my life. She's a dumb character who screams the entire movie.
Like Will Thor? Arnett,
yeah, like Natalie Portman and Thor. Will Arnett is in the character, and he plays a creepy old guy, her camera guy, who's constantly trying to get into Megan Fox's pants the entire movie.
Was there a shot where he's filming her and he like keeps looking down
no,
at her
No, there's
boobs?
A shot where she's trying to help the turtles as they're driving a truck, and she bends out and her ass, and he goes, "Whoa, you stay like that." And then he hits like a fucking snow pile and just crashes the truck.
Okay.
This is like the whole shellboarding scene where they're snowboarding. Yeah. Again, the reason this difference between this and Transformers is Transformers is a fuck up of everything where you can't even see the action. You can't see the action. So like, what's the point of watching it? I can. That's why I liked one. At least one was kind of bearable where you could see what was going on, even with the terrible human scenes. Here you have all the terrible human scenes from Transformer movies, but the action is competently shot, so you can see what's going on. It's decent action. The CGI is actually pretty well done. I didn't have a problem with the CGI suits. They weren't as charming as the Jim Henson one, but again, if this solely focused on the turtles, this would have been a good movie. Mm. You can have like the other kiddie shit that the first two movies had, the original movies had, and this could have been worked well. And like I think Dawn proved that you don't have to have a human main character.
Yeah.
And this is obviously, they're like, no, you need someone to connect with.
They do with
Megan
almost everything.
Fox is fucking terrible. Like, I should have said that because she has nothing to work with in this movie. Like, absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
Whoopi Goldberg, why is she in this movie?
Whoopi Goldberg's in the
she's
movie?
She's like a fucking, the worst cameo ever as the boss of the news station.
Nice.
And it's just, she's in there for like 5 seconds, has no arc, just randomly thrown in there. I was like, why? It's more distracting that she's here than not.
Do you think she was reprising her role as Ed?
Yes, okay. Exactly. William, by the way, and fanboys relax, William Fichtner is not Shredder, so stop your fucking bitching about that.
Spoilers, Jesus.
No, he's like the first 5 minutes of the movie it happens. You find out Shredder raised him. Not that big of a shocker.
I'm not happy.
Okay, I don't care. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle, I give it like a 5 out of 10. It's not as bad as Transformers. It's certainly not a good movie, though. I mean, you have to accept some of the really bad shit that was dumbed down for kids. Like, there's a part where they have to give an adrenaline shot to the turtles, and on the computer screen, big letters, it says adrenaline shot, click here. Like, you have to take that shit along with everything else. But, I mean, for the turtles, they actually were entertaining. The only one that was really weird was Giant Noxil. His voice was just distracting. I just didn't fit all the turtles, especially Leonardo. And Leonardo looks like the leader, and just the lead. He didn't have a leader's voice, Nick Noxil. Mm. Yeah. Last film that I saw, I mean, besides Guardians, was I saw last week. Wasn't going to go see this. Had time to kill. This is the only movie playing. I was actually going to see Wish You Were Here, but I walk into the theater and I'm like, oh, we canceled the showings. No one was seeing the movie.
Wow.
AMC movie theater, literally in the Lincoln Plaza. We're like, we canceled them. No one was seeing Wish We Were Here.
Wow.
I was like, okay, so I'll see Chef. So I saw Chef. It's exactly what you think it is. It's the crowd pleaser. It's so close to being a really good movie. Mm. Instead, it's just above average crowd pleaser that's fun to watch. You can throw on a Saturday afternoon and have a good time watching. Mm. Favreau looks like it's obviously an analogy of his career. It's like Mickey Rourke with The Wrestler. This is Favreau who got roped into doing Cowboys and Aliens because he's the Iron Man director and he did all these big budget movies that weren't that good.
Yeah.
And he came back to his indie roots with Chef. And that's like the kind of the premise of the movie is, but in food form.
Mm-hmm.
you take it for what it is. If it mainly focused on the son character, because he's divorced with his son,
yeah,
it would have been good. I don't like the Sofia Vergara character at all on this. And just the, like, one little thing to, so we can move on after this is everything at the end just gets tied up too neatly. Like, he fucks up his whole life in the like, first half of the movie, and then at the end it was like, oh, you wanted to be a crowd pleaser, so let's do every Hollywood convention of happiness by the end. Let's fix everything about this man's life, and let's tie a neat bow and have him do something where he gets probably married at the end, blah, blah, blah.
Mm.
And that's what Chef does at the end, and it's kind of disappointing. I also saw this in Lincoln Plaza, and I had an old man saying every single line, repeating to his wife, repeating to his old wife who couldn't hear.
Yeah.
And my idea now is that if you're so old that you can't hear surround sound, don't go to a fucking movie.
Mm. I wish someone could develop an app where I can listen to the movie audio on headphones.
That'd be a great idea.
And put, like...
the noise-canceling.
Yeah, and get noise-canceling headphones so I will never have to hear another fucking moron again. That's the dream.
That's a good idea. They make it an app. And you just
how difficult could it be? Just sync up audio.
They do it for gyms and shit like that where you just like tune into the specific station.
That's what I'm saying. I want this. Make it happen now.
No, let's do it ourselves and get rich. I don't know anything about programming. Yeah. Okay, so yeah, that's really it. I would recommend it. Chef's a really entertaining flick to just like kill for. I wouldn't spend $15 on it, but it's fun.
Silver lining, he gave me hope I can one day date someone remotely close to Sofia Vergara.
Yeah, and then, oh man, it's really egotistical. He also bangs Scarlett Johansson in this movie.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's really, really, like, egotistical.
So,
like.
So you're saying there's a chance?
No, I'm saying there's zero chance that his fat ass is really banging those two ladies. I love you, Jon Favreau. I'm kidding. I'm not. I am.
Oh. All right. That was beautiful. Thank you for this.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I mean, are we, like, way over time?
No, we're about to hit the hour.
Okay. So we could have our 20-minute debate.
Yeah. I don't know how this is going to go out. I have a bad feeling about this.
Am I yelling at you?
No, I just have a feeling this is going to be the lost episode. I want to title that. This is the title of it, the lost
episode. Episode 20, the lost episode?
Yeah, I'm calling it that.
Okay, I mean, episode 10 was the Marvel Extravaganza. You might as well have this one have a special name, too.
The deleted episode or the lost episode. Something funny.
You're not that funny, though.
Okay. You know, I'm in such a rut as it is. Do we need to, like, further push me over the cliff?
We need to just shit on your life every chance we get.
I'm going to play this at the funeral, please. Like, I want them to all hear this.
Yeah, I mean, they'll probably accuse me for your suicide, and they'll play this at the trial.
This is going to be, like, the Ultimate Warrior's soliloquy on his last night of living.
He died, right?
Yeah, and the night before he died, he left a very, like, he came out to the wrestling show... and gave a very eerie speech about, like, his life. It was, like, the closest thing you could get from a living eulogy.
Okay, so this is not a wrestling podcast? Shit.
No.
Okay.
But Dave Bautista was in Guardians, and he was awesome, so there's that.
That's true. Okay, yeah, but...
So there's that. And I'm going to rewatch Breaking Bad soon, so there's that, too.
Why?
Because I'm a sick man. I'm a sick world.
I know.
I'm rewatching Twin Peaks also because I got the
Blu-ray. Yeah, and you keep yelling at me. I haven't fucking watched it yet. I'm gonna watch it. It's just on my list with a million other things that's on my fucking list to watch. I have Hannibal on my list.
30 episodes you can manage. Hannibal's 26 episodes you can manage.
Dude, I am so goddamn behind on my other
shows.
Stop
watching fucking Manhattan.
Oh, Manhattan's really Hannibal. Good. This is not a TV podcast. Stop bringing up TV.
You just overloaded not one but two mics. Thank you for that.
Oh, yeah. I hope they're listening. Our listeners are listening on full blast so they get that and just fucking pop their eardrums.
Okay, topic for today is something that I have actually been defending, which is kind of making me sick, but I feel like it's a medium that does need to be defended.
You know when he starts off by saying, I've been defending it, and it makes me sick to my stomach, we're in for a good fucking debate here.
The topic at hand is 3D. Now, rewinding a bit, 3D had a short lifespan in the 80s, where it was used as a gimmick for pretty much any franchise that had a 3 in it.
And horror movies was a big thing.
Jaws 3D, Jason Part 3, 3D, whatever the fuck it is. My Bloody Valentine. There was a lot of them. And
Sleepaway Camp 3D, I think it was one too.
And it was a very crude technology. It was pretty much these red and blue glasses. I feel like I'm talking to a child now. It was red and blue glasses that you had to wear. It did not look good. It really deteriorated, like, the color of the picture because you're literally watching red and blue. the effects typically gave people headaches.
Well, I think we're putting this too far in the past, because even the 90s was the red and blue glasses.
Yeah. I'm going to get to that. So I think the last known massive 3D movie to employ the red-blue glasses was Spy Kids 3D.
I was going
to
say that, yep. Early 2000s.
Which is a movie that was ahead of its time.
What?
In terms of the 3D. Just because I feel like that it was.
You ever watch that movie? It's like fucking Shock Girl and Lava Boy, where it's just like it looks like someone drew in the background terribly, like a child did it.
So that
I can't believe we're arguing over Shock Girl and Lava Boy.
I think pretty much we could say Spy Kids 3D was the death of the old 3D.
Mm-hmm.
And then slowly films were employing a new 3D called Real D. I think that's what it's called now, Real D. Technology caught up with what 3D is. And slowly we were getting films that were being shown in 3D. I remember Superman Returns was in 3D. Monster House was in 3D. These were like the very early real
D Superman movies. Returns was not fully in 3D, though. It was certain parts were 3D.
Because
I remember...
Monster House was a very early one I remember seeing in 3D.
Because I remember there was actually... there was like, this is the back of the day where they had the icon on the corner of the screen. Put your 3D glasses down.
Yeah, yeah. And then, pretty much the biggest movie we can say now in American film history came out, Avatar, which originally was very well received critically, and then very quickly got a lot of backlash.
Well, because they realized it's not that much fun watching it at home.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
It was an experience. And through this experience, and because of the money it made, the 3D revolution was born. Some people say it was born again. I want to say it was just born. And the next thing you know, almost every major release was
converted
in 3D.
Yeah, converted.
Post-converted in 3D and filmed in 3D. Now, me personally, and this is where the debating begins, I feel 3D a lot like digital film, a lot like CGI, and a lot like pretty much any tool you have can be useful and can be beneficial if used properly. And if done professionally. And that's been my viewpoint. And a lot of people feel that 3D needs to die quickly and it's a gimmick. And I disagree with that immensely. I feel it can be a part of the film art form. Falco, your thoughts. And you don't have to feel conflicted to agree or disagree with me.
I'm gonna be half-half on this issue, but I'm probably going to be like, it's like 70-30, where 70% I'm disagreeing and 30% I'm agreeing with you.
Okay.
The fact that the thing is, when you look at back at Avatar, you take away all those fucking pretty visuals, and you watch it at home, and what is it? It's a shitty version of Pocahontas. That's all it was, and that's why it's had a huge backlash in the past. Okay. It's an amazing experience to watch on screen because it was 3D-minded. They shot it with 3D in mind, and especially with the CGI graphics. And that's when 3D works. Mm. Even if... you post-convert it. Okay. There was a recent interview on, I don't remember which, I think it was maybe AMC Movie Talk or Schmoes Know, where they talked to a post-converter.
Uh-huh.
And the guy said, the post-conversion works in two ways. When it's shot with 3D in mind, maybe not on a 3D camera, and there's enough time for the post-conversion. Films like Clash of the Titans, Wrath of the Titans, was not shot in 3D mind, and they only had like half the time of a normal conversion to make those into 3D movies. That's the part that needs to die.
Same thing with Harry Potter. Harry Potter, that happened.
Did it?
I'm pretty sure the last two.
I didn't see any of the last like five Harry Potters. I think the last time I watched was Goblet of Fire.
I think the misconception, which I try to push upon people and no one ever really listens because they're not that into knowing this, is 3D is more than the
things popping
classic pointing the finger through the screen, pointing the gun through the screen, which still happens, but 3D adds what's called depth of field, which
I was just gonna say this, yeah,
gives the film more breadth of scope. Everything feel more massive.
One
more
movie that I can say
intimate.
This is why 30% I agree with you is that in certain, I'm not a 3D guy. I try to avoid 3D like it's the plague, but there's certain films where I get caught and I have to watch the 3D because it's just timing. And one of the films that recently that I saw that had amazing 3D and makes the experience 10 times better was How to Train Your Dragon 2.
Mm.
The flying scenes and there's stuff always going on in the background just to increase the depth of vision. It works and it definitely was drawn or computer animated with 3D in mind.
Yeah.
And especially the flying scenes through the clouds, Like, you feel like there's, like, miles of clouds behind them flying. Mm. And it just, it feels so good.
Guardians, I saw in 3D.
I saw in 3D, too. It was cool.
I thought it was great.
I
thought the space battles felt so much more epic. The scenes where, like, they're establishing worlds feel a lot more, like I keep saying, intimate. Everything feels intimate when it's in 3D, done properly. I'm trying to think of what else. I'm very selective on what I see. If you ever Google it, there is a section on one of the movie sites that is called 3D or 2D or something like that, and it judges the 3D, like, division of categories, gives you the rating, and both times it's given a high rating, I've gone and I've had a great experience. I saw Lego Movie in 3D, which I really enjoyed. Saw Guardians in 3D, and I will argue this with a lot of people. I saw Prometheus in 3D. I think Prometheus in 3D was better than Avatar in 3D.
Yeah, because probably the beautiful visuals is lets you ignore the fucking horrible story.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I have pent up rage against Prometheus. I like it, but it just every time I watch it again, it just, like, another element of it bothers me. Like, okay. I have to stop watching it.
So,
get back to 3D.
IMAX, I think 3D has a place in filmmaking, but it needs to be done.
It's diluted at this point, though.
Yeah. If you're going to do something in 3D, I think more care and consideration needs to be placed. It's not just another reason to gouge the price.
There's a reason why the 3D TVs are failing. Because partially of, you have the one, they have like the 10% of the movies out there that actually put the viewer ahead of you, and they actually did it because it makes it a more immersive experience. Then the 90% of everything else out there is just a gimmick designed to get more money out of the user,
But I think the other argument is the reason 3D TVs are failing is A, they're not affordable.
Well, yeah.
B, their glasses cost about $60 a piece. And run on batteries. They weigh, like,
but
a decent amount.
But also the thing about it, normal individuals can't watch more than 2 hours of fucking 3D.
Yeah.
It kills your eyes.
Yeah.
Like, it's not a stable. You take everything, like, for example, you just said Avatar. You take everything, all the visual gimmick away from Avatar. What is it? Like, a lot of these 3D fucking events, which are really nice to look at on the big screen, you take away everything, all the 3D and all that gimmickry and shit, it's not really that strong of a movie. That's why they have the 3D there.
3D was not made for close quarter environment.
No,
3D,
no, I agree.
Exactly like IMAX is not for your home. It's for the theater.
Oh, don't get me started with fucking IMAX light
and
theaters.
That's why,
the IMAX light theaters, yeah, are the worst thing. Those are more of a money grab than fucking the 3D.
There's three.
Let these people know what we're talking about. Yeah.
Well, all right. IMAX is pretty much, I think, 60 millimeter or 65. I always forget what the number is.
Yeah, I don't remember. Is it?
I'm going to say 65. It's pretty much the largest film ratio you can get out of film. It's shot on a very specific camera, a very loud, clumsy camera that is selectively used because it's extremely expensive. I think the only filmmakers of the modern era that have used IMAX is Nolan, Abrams, Brad Bird.
Even Nolan with Dark Knight didn't even use it for the whole film. He used it for parts.
There's never been a full narrative feature film to use IMAX the entire runtime. It's only selected scenes because it's that expensive. I think Dark Knight Rises has come the closest with
probably
how many
the most
scenes
time,
shot
yeah.
in IMAX. Star Wars Episode 7 is the next one. But I believe there is a film recently that they said was shot in IMAX. I forget which one they said it was.
So get back to what they actually were talking about.
And then in terms of theaters, there are theaters that will charge you for IMAX.
Say it's IMAX.
And they are slightly larger screens, but
nowhere near the size.
Nowhere
of
near the sheer size of what a legit IMAX.
So I like
is.
To call it IMAX Lite.
So if you're in,
like, you have the fucking apps on the iPhone.
If you're in the New York City area, which I'm sure most of you are, there are only three real IMAX theaters I know of. There's the one on 1998 Broadway, which is the AMC Lincoln Center, Lincoln
Plaza or whatever. Yeah,
yeah.
Great theater. I love that theater.
That's the first one. The second one is in New Rock City. It's a Regal, I believe.
Yes.
New Rock City. That is the other legit one. And then the third one is a Dome, which is in the Liberty Science Center in New Jersey. And that's it. If you ever...
I've never been to that one.
I've only seen a nature documentary there. when I was a kid. But I know they were showing Dark Knight there. I can't imagine what that experience is like, because that is literally lean back in your chair and the entire screen is a
That's
dome.
Amazing.
Yeah, I wanted to try it at least once.
If they ever do 2001 Space Odyssey, there we're going.
Right? Yeah. So if you ever see IMAX, don't pay that price, because it's not worth it.
Nope.
You're not getting
it. Unless you're going to those theaters.
Those three. So yeah, I guess we'll wrap it up, because I think we're both... It's not really.
I'm getting angry.
It's not really a subject of debate. I think we're both in agreement of like what the problem is. The problem is that the studios see it as the price, the directors see it as like an artistic thing,
and the business sees it just dollar bills.
Yeah, and I'm sure most directors that have it forced down their throats don't give a shit. The ones that do give a shit end up making it
like
look good.
Louis Leterrier for the Titan movies, and then the other one was Jonathan Liesman, who coincidentally directed Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yeah. I originally used to think if it was post-converted, it would be bad, but I've seen movies that were post-converted, and I still think it was a good 3D experience.
The guy on that talk show opened my mind. He said it has to be shot with 3D in mind, and it has to be given a decent amount of time to do the post-conversion, because you're basically breaking down the film and rebuilding it. Like, I mean, you have to have enough time to do that, and that takes like half a year, almost 2 years to do. A lot of these people are made to do this in like 2-3 months, and that's not fucking possible.
So, I think we're both in agreement. I don't think it's a fad. I think it just needs to be used properly.
So moving on, I think we're done with the 3D conversation. I hate it, obviously, more than Lewis, but one of our new ideas for our format, we're still going to do top five lists, but we're going to do top five lists, we're going to do all these other stuff. One of the ideas that we've had also is a debate list, not like this today, where we pick a topic of debate, and we don't know what side we're going to be debating on, and we flip a coin like Debate Club. We flip it because that made us sound really cooler. We flip a coin, and whatever we get, whatever side, whoever picks, like, heads for Lewis, he gets that side of the debate, and we just have to argue on that side of the debate. Just something different to throw it in, because the top five list can get kind of monotonous even for us every week on a basis. Mm-hmm. So at least we can split it up and do something different. We still want to do other stuff, too, like we want to do our Planet of the Apes episode when Lewis finally removes his head from his ass and sees Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. So we want to just mix it up a bit and not be grounded to one format.
What he said.
Yeah, obviously. Get your head out of your ass and see Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, please.
Help me. All right. So, yeah, I think that's going to do it for this week.
Yeah, because I've never seen the... Besides the original Planet of the Apes, I've never seen any of the other Planet of the Apes movies.
Yeah, I concur. Yeah. I concur. All right. So, we'll be back soon.
Yeah.
It's going to do it for CFJ. My blog has been pretty much defunct. I'll only promote it if I ever write something new, which hasn't happened for a while. But you can follow me on Twitter at TheLewisMatta. The spelt the regular way, LUISMATTA.
Yeah, you can find me same place, at athaco713 on Twitter. Follow the Film Class Junkies page. Film Class Junkies just moved onto its own hosting service. So it's been getting a little bit more traction, a little more traffic. That also means I have to do some other stuff and fix up the website with the plugins, but it's a work in progress, basically. So still visit the site, please.
All right, so that's going to do it, kids. I'll see you soon.